Welcome to the Militant Grind Show, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who've mastered the art of being their best selves. Every episode is a testament to resilience, dedication, and the pursuit of excellence, embodying our tagline, the most honorables. Here you'll find inspiration, insights, and strategies to elevate your life in every aspect. For more empowering content and to join our community of achievers, visit us at militantgrind.com. Let's embark on this journey together because the grind never stops. Are you ready for a radical transformation? Join the ranks of the most honorables. Our proven methods forge resilience, sharpen strategic thinking, and unlock your true potential. We'll challenge you mentally, physically, and spiritually, preparing you to overcome any obstacle. Visit militantgrindacademy.com and begin your evolution. Greatness awaits. Forge your path, ignite your future. Most of all, join the movement.
Welcome to the Militant Grind podcast with guest Paul Roscoe White, a retired Air Force veteran and champion coach who shares his strategies for excellence in life and leadership. For his experiences as a fighter pilot instructor to winning sports championships, Paul reveals how discipline and positivity can forge champions. Tune in to explore Paul's journey and unlock the secrets to becoming your best self. Paul, how are you today, sir?
Dude, I'm well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Oh, man, I appreciate you coming on, man. Like, when I read that you were a fighter pilot, I was just like, oh, God, yes.
Definitely worse ways to make a living, for sure.
Right. I'm such a big fan of Top Gun, man. I watched the second one. I ended up crying. I love that movie. And it's good. Then I tend to think, wow, why haven't I ever came across a real fighter pilot before?
Well, we're out there. I put us up on, and I think generally speaking in our community, we put ourselves in the same category as some of the other elite teams that you might be more familiar with. In the last 20, maybe 25 years or so, definitely since 9/11 and Iraq and Afghanistan, the ground forces probably consumed a lot of the spotlight for good reason. I mean, they were doing the majority of the work in those two theaters for sure. So your Navy SEALs, your special operators, your Green Berets, some of the CIA guys that were behind the scenes, a lot of those guys kind of took the spotlight from the Air Force and the fighter pilots, and they earned it for sure. But at the same time, I mean, when you start drawing the lines of parallel between how we train, what we do, the types of missions that we get into, we're definitely in the same conversation. It is an elite team. It's a fraternity of people who are hard charging. And I tell this story and I tell it like, when you stick your nose into a fight at 500 miles an hour and you don't have a reverse option, you have to know that you have your shit together. Mm-hmm. And that comes from a lot of preparation and dedication and passion for what you do.
Yeah. And then I feel like there's more of a chance of you dying being a fighter pilot just by a simple mistake, a simple little turn or something like that, or the wind. Yeah. And it's like, it's just so much going on and so much brain power going into what you're doing and that present moment.
Well, I don't know if there's more of a chance of you dying. There definitely is a man-machine interface that happens. And you're sitting in a cockpit and you give a mechanical input that's translated into electrical signal that goes out to pieces of the airplane that does a certain function or whatever. But one of the differences is for the ground fighters, I believe, they largely rely on their physical abilities to get them in and out of places, whereas we may rely more on the machine to get us in and out of places. So yeah, in some ways I could see what you're saying. However, that said, flying is inherently safe. And I mean, what do they say? Statistically, you're more likely to get struck by lightning than die in a plane crash. Yeah. So they're inherently safe. The maintainers that we have are fantastic and our teams are really good at what they do. So I never went up in the air thinking, oh man, this could be my last one.
Oh, so were you a combat veteran as a fighter pilot?
Three times, yep.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Wow. Well, now think about, you know, continuing that conversation, think about the combat that we were doing, and maybe you even use combat in air quotes. Mm-hmm. We were supporting the ground scheme of maneuver. So the ground commanders, the army commanders, the special operators, those kinds of people who were going and kicking down doors, we were there to support them. Afghanistan wasn't shooting missiles back at us.
Okay.
Now, if we go to war with potentially a different country or different entity or different theater, then that might change. Mm-hmm. But in that, for the last 20 years, we haven't necessarily had people shooting back at us, which is, I mean, that's comforting for sure.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking like World War II when
very different. If China, Russia, Ukraine, any of those theaters, if we were to go into that, then it may be a different equation. But right. For the last 20 years, what we've been doing really, it really wasn't, how do I say it? It really wasn't as high threat as you might think from the air perspective. The guys on the ground, I think, bore the brunt of that.
Yeah, for sure. I guess so. You were basically just like protecting the guys on the ground.
Yeah,
kind of
for
like
sure.
What they did at Vietnam.
Yeah. In fact, we had there was a sign on our door, on our life support door. We'd go in there and we put on all of our harnesses and our G suits and things, and we'd start to walk out to our planes. And there was a sign on the door that said, the mission is an 18-year-old with a rifle. So we never lost sight of the idea that we are a support asset. We are there to help them. And when they're screaming on the other end of the radios, when they're getting shot at by the bad guys, it's up to us a lot of times to kind of dampen the situation a little bit, to kind of keep things calm and cool. We used to joke around that we had the 5 C's of communication. You probably know about clear, concise, and correct. But the other two that people normally don't talk about is calm and cool. And you have to be calm on the radio. You have to sound cool on the radio because that guy's getting his ass shot off down there. And if you don't dampen the situation and kind of tamper it down a little bit, then that's where maybe you can make mistakes. Or if you get caught up in the adrenaline of the situation, that's where bad things can happen.
Yeah, definitely. And so what got you? So when you first joined the Air Force, how old were you? Or you 18?
I was 20. Yeah, 20? I was 20 when I joined.
Okay. And so were your expectations were like, okay, I'm coming in here to be a pilot?
Oh, no. Far from it. In fact, there's no such thing as the way in the military. Mm-hmm. If anybody ever says, this is the way you get promoted, this is the way you get to be a commander, this is the way you get to be a general, there's no such thing as the way. You have to pick your wave and you have to ride it. Mm-hmm. And my wave was, I saw Top Gun when I was a kid. I was about 9 years old or so and fell in love with airplanes. Airplanes, for whatever reason, they just did it for me. Some people, it's guitar music. Some people, it's finances, whatever. Airplanes was my thing. Well, the problem is I grew up in podunk country town. My dad was a cotton farmer. I know zero people who are in the military. And I didn't have a strong mentor to show me the way or show me a path on how to get there. Went to college out of high school, failed miserably at it. I did not associate go to college with go to class, so I did not do well. After a couple of years, decided I have no money, I have no other options, so I'm going to join the military. And I remember going into the recruiter and talking to him, and he says, what do you want to do? I said, well, I like working outside, I like fixing things, and I want to be around airplanes. And he says, well, you want to be a crew chief. And a crew chief is the aircraft mechanic. So, man, I fell in love with it. I loved being a crew chief. I loved the people I worked with. I loved the job. I loved fixing airplanes. I was pretty good at it. I promoted myself pretty fast. Simultaneously, got married, had some kids, and realized that I probably didn't want to do this forever. I felt like I could do more. I felt like there was more out there and I was capable of doing more. So I started going to school, got my education. And we were talking in the pregame, we were talking about opportunities, and I put together a package to go to officer training school. Mm-hmm. Went into my first commander or my commander at the time. And I put it in front of him and he says, hey man, I'll be honest with you. It's okay. It's not great. It's just okay. And it kind of burst my bubble a little bit. Now I could have taken that and I could have wallowed in sorrow and failure. But instead, I used it as motivation and I kept going to school and I got my master's degree and I got a couple more awards at work. And about 2 years later, I went into the next commander, presented him an officer training school package. And he was like, yeah, dude, this is awesome. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And so he signed it. So that opportunity that was presented to me was out of failure. I learned lessons and I kept my head up and I kept grinding. And that door opened for me for that next commander to be able to send me to officer training school. That's when I got offered a spot flying airplanes and I got in the back seat of a F-15E.
Wow.
Yeah. So like I said, there's no the way to get there. Sometimes you just keep looking at the horizon and what's the next thing and keep knocking down dominoes, man.
Wow. So your 9 year old self manifested that.
What's funny is, and this is a complete side story, but I had this buddy at church when we were little kids. We used to play together every weekend. We'd get together and stay at either his house or my house. And we would either play Top Gun or Navy SEALs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it was Navy SEALs. We'd be out in the woods shooting each other with BB guns or whatever it was, all painted up in camo and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was going to grow up and be a Navy SEAL, and he was going to grow up and be a fighter pilot. And the roles actually 100% reversed. I grew up and got to fly jets for a career, and he went into the Marines and went to sniper school and spent his career on the side of a hill looking through a scope.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was really, we got to reconnect a bunch of years later and tell a lot of really cool stories. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow, man. That's amazing. That's amazing. Yes. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow, man. Yes. It's just crazy. It's great to hear a story about someone that had an intention at 9 years old that actually grew up to become that intention.
Well, for me, it was purely accidental. I know a lot of people. In fact, the friend of mine, my close brother that we have a podcast of our own, he knew at 8 or 9 years old that he wanted to be a fighter pilot, and he locked step by step, and he got there a lot quicker than I did. Mm-hmm. Not easier, but a lot quicker. He had a mentor. He had somebody to show him a quicker path to get there. And I kind of just, I did it the hard way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you weren't going in expecting to be that though, but it's just crazy how all of that just came to be. Yeah. So did you go through any resistance while you were in there, any hard times when it came to actually becoming a fighter pilot?
Oh man, everything's hard. Life is hard. And so I'm getting ready to go give this talk this afternoon to these people. And I've got five main points. And one of them is, dudes, if you set a goal out there and you want to reach a goal, it doesn't matter what it is. You're going to have to do hard shit to get to it. Mm-hmm. You set these audacious goals out there, and if you back down at the first sign of any kind of adversity or friction, then you're never going to reach it. You're going to have to bust out of your comfort zone. You're going to have to do shit that you're not familiar with or that's hard to be able to get there. And man, there's a list as long as this room is tall of obstacles that you have to overcome to get to whatever it is you're doing. And in my case, it was, I had zero college. I had to start. You have to have a 4-year degree to become an officer, and you have to be an officer to fly jets. So you can kind of see, follow the bouncing ball here. This is a grind, man. And you know, you have to nug it out, and you have to just never lose sight of what you're trying to chase and break that down. You know, in the business world, they call it chunking. You chunk it down into little bite-sized edible pieces. And how do you eat an elephant, man? One bite at a time.
Right. Right. Wow. And so first you went to college. You say did you drop out, or you just didn't get good grades?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I say I drop out. They did not invite me back. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah, it was mutual.
Yeah. So going from that to, oh man, now I have to complete a 4-year degree.
Yeah.
You know, so what was it that just motivated you so much to say, I'm going to get this 4-year degree so I could become an officer?
Well, it wasn't that. It was the wife and kids and my vision of where I thought I want my life to go. It did not involve sitting behind a desk in the Air Force and managing the crew of mechanics. Because like I said, I kind of promoted myself sort of fast, mm-hmm. ahead of my peers. And I was looking at staring at a desk for the rest of my life, for the rest of my Air Force career anyways. And I didn't want that. I felt like I was capable of more. I felt like I had more to give. And looking at my wife and kids, I'm thinking I can do more to provide better for them. And mm-hmm. that was probably the driving force, was just this internal desire to do more, to do better, always chasing adventure, always chasing the next thing. And at the end of that is when I kind of went, well, let me see if I can be an officer. So it wasn't like I had this carrot out there that I was chasing. I was literally just knocking down dominoes, man.
Hmm. Wow. And how many kids did you have at the time?
When I went to OTS, I had 3 kids. My youngest son was maybe 6 months old when mm-hmm. I went to officer training school.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. And you have 3 kids total?
I have 3 kids now, and I like to say that I picked up a 4th. I have a bonus kid. My youngest son's best friend he came to live with us for about 2 years in our house. He had a kind of sort of a bad home life, and my youngest boy came to me. They've been friends since like 4th or 5th grade, and he says, hey, man, can Colin come and live with us? And I said, yeah, man, we got enough love and enough space. Let's bring him in. And it turns out that was super rewarding from my point of view as a dad, as a mentor, as a coach, to be able to show him something that he had never seen before. And that was what a loving family is like. I mean, he's 18 years old. We made him write letters to Santa Claus because he'd never done that before. He'd never done the Easter Bunny. So we went out and we hid Easter eggs and we had a great time. And so we're trying to show him what a family does. And we help each other and we laugh and we cry together. And I was able to mentor him for about a year and a half. And he actually joined the Air Force and went through basic training. And now he's stationed down here at Luke Air Force Base working on F-35s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, what a success story, man. And it wasn't me. It wasn't necessarily me doing all this stuff. It was on for a lot of credit goes to him for being open to that. Right. I mean, he could have had some shields up for sure, but he was open to it. He was humble enough to accept the mentorship that I was giving him and actually listen to me. And it was not without some gnashing of teeth for sure. I mean, there was a lot of, I had to really convince him that I was on his team. He'd never had that before. And so that took a lot of work to get to that point where he really trusted what I was saying. But once he did, man, he's just taken off like a rocket. I love it.
You want to know what's like crazy is that militant minded men love things like that. Like they love taking something and then producing a productive thing, whether it be a person, a home. Say my dad did the same thing. Like all of my friends were allowed in my house because some of them didn't have dads, family home or whatever. So we were almost like the boys club.
Yeah. You know?
And a lot of, and now my friends are thinking back like, wow, instead of running the streets or doing this or getting into activities, we just hung out over there.
Yeah.
And that takes a great man to at least open his home to all of these people and let them just run through it like it's theirs.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what your dad probably really enjoyed about that was he enjoyed the mentorship that he was able to pass on to those kids. Because we are cut from a different cloth. The military people are just cut from a different cloth, and we get exposed to a lot of things that the public writ large doesn't get exposed to. A lot of high pressure situations, a lot of stress, a lot of following instructions. I mean, there's just so many things, intangible things that your dad probably really enjoyed passing on to those other kids. And I bet you they're better because of it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause I say like the friends that grew up without a dad, they're like super active fathers, but then they would tell me like Mr. Perryman was like the dad of the community. Me, I was my dad. So I really didn't matter to me.
You don't realize it.
But to some other kids that didn't have no man at all to look up to, he was the one. And that was like very important to him. But then, so my neighborhood was split into two, right? So there's a west side and there's the east side. So my block was like where everybody came and got together, and that's the house. Then on the other side, my friend Ronald, his dad was a veteran and was in the army, and his dad's house was the spot. So it was like we would basically go back and forth between the two.
Yeah.
But then his dad was like a mentor to the people on that side, and my dad was a mentor to people on this side.
That's great.
You know, and his dad loves me, and my dad loves Ronald. And it's just crazy how like all of that comes about and the changes that we see in people when we actually bring them on and give them the best that we got.
Well, what happens though, man, is when you get to be our age, when you get to be older and you kind of reflect back on it, you look at those times and you go, oh, I get it now. Mm-hmm. At first, it seems like your dad is being a disciplinarian or being overbearing or over authoritative or something like that. But what he's really doing is he's teaching you some life lessons that you're really going to need when you get into your 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And like my kids are starting to come back around now. They're old enough to come back around and go, Dad, I totally get it now. Like in the moment, it seemed like you were an asshole. Now I understand that you were just teaching us that discipline is important and following instruction is important and always striving to be a little bit better than you were yesterday is important. When those are the kind of people that we can look across in the public and we can say, these are the types of people who are going to grow up to be our leaders in the next generation.
Man, you are absolutely right, because I hated it with a passion growing up.
Yeah, like, it sucks.
Like, we had to work on in the yard. He would just create things for us to do out of nowhere. What the hell is it like? Why do we have to do this? I want to go outside and play, you know? But, you know, it was so bad that our friends used to tease us, call us slaves, and
What was the lesson that you were learning, man? You were learning the lesson of work hard, play hard. If you get your chores done first thing in the morning, then you got all afternoon to go goof off. And I still do that to this day. I get up and I try to get all my stuff done early in the morning so that I got the rest of the day to watch NASCAR, take a nap, whatever I want to do. And my kids, even to this day, as grown up kids, they come back to the house and I've always got something for them to do. Hey, help me put this stuff up in the, I mean, I'm old and I'm busted, right? But I will get them out there and we'll go do some yard work or something. Hey, you got to earn your keep around here, man. If you want dinner, you got to earn that shit.
That's funny because my dad used to take my friends and tell them, hey, if you're going to hang out over here, you need to come over here and work too.
Oh, I do the same thing.
Yeah, like my friend. My friends, I forgot that he even did that, but they never forgot that. Mm-hmm. They'll be like,
no, my son's friends, they do the same thing. They come over here, and a lot of those kids, even though my kids have grown up and they've kind of gone off a little bit, they're in different parts. They don't live here anymore. The friends still come to our house. They still show up out here and they'll sit on the back porch and just talk with me. And hey, man, can I help you with anything? Yeah, man, let's go out and wash the driveway real quick. And it's really, I'm really proud of the community of people that we've been able to give back to. And I take a lot of ownership of training up the next generation of people because I don't want them to suck. I want them to be awesome. I want them to be leaders and successful. And I'm hopefully teaching them some of the methods and things that you have to do to get to those things.
Yeah, man, that's actually amazing because my wife's younger brother was going through some trouble in high school, right? And this is when we just first started dating and I first got to know him. And so I lived in an apartment across the street from the beach. It was nice. And her mom was like, okay, we're going to bring him over. She was my girlfriend at the time. Bring him over and he's going to hang out with you. Man, I busted his ass. I'm talking about... We were waking up at 4 in the morning, running on the beach, running upstairs. He threw up. I was on him. And I would like haze him and record it, put it online. People were like, why are you acting like that to that young boy? But I was drilling him so hard. And next thing, he was just like, he ended up graduating from high school. He was like, I'm not going to say who, but it was a very important family member in his life. And they only had one ticket, right? And I probably knew him for about a year or two at the time. And he was like, I want that ticket to go to Sherman. And I was like, what? Now he's in the Navy and he's doing very well. He just bought a condo. He has a baby on the way. Yeah. And I was just, and then just recently, he came out here and for his birthday celebration. And it's funny how you said that even though I pushed that person, it was up to them to respond to. And so I thought the same thing. I was like, I pushed you, but you were just so tough that you just kept going and you didn't let me break you. And I gave him so much praise and credit for that. He didn't turn down anything. 5 in the morning. Hey, let's go to the gym. Okay. He wasn't whining. He wasn't complaining or any of that. Yeah. And it's just so great to just see like the small fruits that you put into somebody like change their life.
Well, have you heard the analogy of the Chinese bamboo tree?
Mm-mm.
The Chinese bamboo tree, the story goes, they plant the seed and there's a guy that has to go water that seed every day for 5 years before it breaks the surface, before it blooms. Mm-hmm. So think about that as a metaphor for life and the seeds that you plant in the youth. And if you keep watering that for long enough, they're eventually going to blossom and they're going to grow up. And then once that Chinese bamboo tree breaks ground, it grows to full length in something like 21 days. So it really doesn't take that much on their part. It takes a lot on our part as the mentors, as the coaches of the world. You have to keep investing in these people. And something that I've been saying for a long time, I've had the opportunity to raise my kids and I coached football for a really long time. I coached youth football and looking back, and I've been an instructor and a trainer in the military for, I don't know, 25 years or so. One of the best feelings in the world from our point of view is knowing that you made a difference in somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see that and you just see these guys grow up and just start kicking ass in the real world, you don't take a lot of credit for it, but I sit back and allow myself to be proud of the fact that I was able to influence some of that.
Yeah. And that's all you could really do. You cannot take credit and say, I was the reason why.
Well, because that's not what it's about. It's not about me. It's about them.
Yeah.
You know, and because I've already done mine. I've already had my journey. I've already had my experiences and I've already done all that stuff. This is about watching them grow and watching them flourish. I have a boy he's in college right now in ROTC. And so I get to coach him through a lot of the things that I went through when I was younger and help keep him focused because I know when he gets done with his college degree and goes off to fly fighter jets like he wants to, he's going to look back on it and go, man, that was awesome. That was what a great, I made friends that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. And I'm going to get to go do all these cool things. And I had this coach over here who was constantly yelling at me, but he kept me on track. I still remember my high school football coach and some of the things that he taught to us. And I remember my pastor from high school from when I was growing up, the pastor of our church, and some of the things that he used to teach us. And you hang on to those things. None of those guys would ever take any credit for any of my accomplishments. I would never take credit for any of my kids or anybody that I've coached or mentored. I would never take credit for any of their accomplishments, but I would be proud to know that I had influence on them.
Yeah. And that's kind of like a good way, because there are people that do change people's lives and they take credit. But then sometimes I'm like, you're not really the real reason why they're successful. Yeah. Even though you gave them all that you got and all of these things, it was still up to them to respond to it.
They still have to do the work.
Yeah, they still have to do. They still, because think about how many people quit on you.
That's right.
Are you going to take accountability for that?
Well, dude, I got a text message a couple of weeks ago from a guy that I haven't talked to in several years. And he's pretty close to me. He texts me and he says, hey, I know we don't talk very often, but I'm kind of stuck and I was wondering if you could help me out a little bit. Sure, dude. And we set up a call and we talked for, I don't know, an hour or so. And I gave him some good stuff to think about, right? Mm-hmm. And he's just at a point in his life where he's 33 and he's kind of stuck. And I was offering him some things that could hopefully get him unstuck. Well, the next week we have another call for about 90 minutes. So we've spent 2.5 hours on the phone talking about things. And I told him exactly what you and I were just talking about. I said, dude, here's the deal, man. We can talk for an hour every week from now until the time we both die. But what it comes down to is you have to do the work. Mm-hmm. That's it. And there's no easy button in life. There's no get rich quick scheme. There's no 6-minute abs. You have to do the work, dude. You just have to do it.
Yeah. There's no 6-minute abs. That's funny. Because I remember like stuff like that getting like promoted so much. Oh man.
It's still out there. You look around social media and look around the internet and people are selling the next get skinny quick pill or whatever it is. It doesn't fucking work, man. You got to go to here's how you get skinny. All right. And there's no such thing as get skinny quick. Here's how you get skinny. Here's how you get skinny. Don't eat like shit and move your body.
Right.
If you do those two things, then you're probably going to end up being okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very simple, but I feel like they try to make it. Well, it's not that they try to make it hard, but they try to make it more simpler than as simple as it is for lazy people.
Well, exactly it. Bingo. They're making it. They're selling it to people who don't want to do the work.
Yeah.
I know people around here who have gone and gotten mommy makeovers. And the liposuction and the lifts and the tucks and all the things. And then 4 or 5 years later, they look exactly like they did beforehand.
Oh my God. After
before they spent that however many thousands of dollars to get all that work done because they didn't change their habits. They didn't do the work.
Man, I know so many. That's actually like a thing. So the BBL ended up becoming a waste because you're not taking care of yourself.
That's right.
And I tell people because I have female friends and they would come to me like, hey, what do you think? Because I'm kind of like the wise guy or something like if people ask me opinion, what's my thoughts on all of this stuff, right? And I'm just like, all you have to do is just do squats and work out. Like, the butt is nothing but a muscle. You could grow that muscle. It's not hard to do it. Mm-hmm. The reason why it's the way it is because you're not doing things. Like, say when girls are in high school or in college, their body is tight, but you're walking around all day. You're active. You're walking to class. And that's now you're an adult and you're just sitting in a chair typing all day. And the only walking you do is when you go to the store probably once a week. So the muscle isn't cultured. It's not firm anymore. So it's just as simple as that. But your best self is your healthy self, the healthiest version of you.
Well, I will take that one step further. And I will say that something that I coach and something that I kind of preach to people is mind, body, soul balance. And for me, and now I've gone through this too. I've gone through ups and downs. Now I'm 47 years old. I'm fit. I'm active. I read a lot. I've got pretty good balance in my life, but it wasn't always that way. Mm-hmm. Luckily enough, I was self-aware and I saw the path that I was on. And so when I retired from the military after 21 years, my kids were also getting up to that 15-year-old-ish mark. So they're getting their driver's license. They don't rely on dad much anymore. They kind of do what they need to do. They can take care of themselves. They're self-sufficient. Oh, by the way, I just lost the military as well. So I lost my why for a lot of things. And your why is super important in your life. You have to have a why. You have to have something that you're going after. It took about 2.5 or maybe 3 years. I had chronic back pain, ended up having surgery. I got really good at sitting in my chair, eating Cheez-Its and watching Netflix. And a reflection in the mirror showed that. It was, it was input one to output one. And it was super easy to do the math equation on that one. Well, one day I realized that's not me. That's not the Paul that I want to be. That's not the guy that I want in 30 years or so. My wife and I have dreams of, now that our kids are moved out, we want to go and do things. We want to travel. We want to go and experience stuff. And you have to take care of your body and able to do that. But there's a balance equation there that comes with the mind and body and soul. So what I started doing was just going for walks around my neighborhood while I listened to either a really good podcast or an Audible book. Mm-hmm. So now I'm feeding all three of those things in a finite amount of time. And it didn't take long before I look at my reflection and I go, you know what? I feel better. I look better. My midsection is going down a little bit. I feel smarter. I feel engaged. I feel like I can sit here and have a conversation with Sherman all day. My ankles and knees feel better. My back is starting to feel. So you see how all these things are kind of tied together. And one of the analogies I use on my podcast a lot is I say, it's a big old knot, man. All this stuff is like a big old knot and it all ties together. If you've got one of those things out of balance, like a three-legged stool, it's going to fall over. If you're constantly focused on your body and you're not feeding your mind and your spirit as well, then your stool's going to topple, man.
Right. That is true, though. That's very true, because I'm the same thing. Militant grind is mind, body, soul. You can't have one without the other because they all are a part of you. But yeah. I feel like people, it is a lot of work keeping them all in balance, though. It is. You probably are not going to have time to do any frivolous things.
Dude, yeah. Life ain't easy, man. I mean, right. Life is hard. Get a helmet. There's no easy button. You just have to do the stuff. And at the end of the day, when you look at your reflection in the mirror, this is one of the things when I coach people, one of the very first things that I have them do is I do the mirror test. I say, I want you to take off all your clothes and stand naked in front of your mirror and stare at yourself for 60 seconds. If you can't find something that you can work on or something that needs improvement, then get up close and stare in your eyes and really get down in your soul and start thinking about what kind of person you are. Think about your character. Think about the things that you do and how you communicate with people. And I mean, people usually don't even make it to 60 seconds. Within 10 or 15 seconds, they're like, all right, good. I'm done. I got a list. And they start working on it. But that's a really good litmus test. If you stare in front of the mirror, even Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was Mr. Olympia like 6 or 7 times, he stares in front of the mirror and he goes, yeah, I can work on that rear delt just a little bit more. There's always room for self-improvement.
Right. Yeah. It was crazy. Like I listened to Arnold Schwarzenegger book. I have his bodybuilding book. And I was just like, wow, he really did not like his calves.
That's right. Yeah.
He was like, I used to take pictures in lakes just to hide my calves. And I saw him too. I was like, whoa. But he's the pillar of bodybuilding.
Well, but he wasn't always that way.
Right.
He wasn't that image that when you think bodybuilding, you think Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I just finished his new book, Be Useful. I finished it last month. And same thing, one of my big takeaways from that was he didn't like where he was, so he made a change.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's the message for your listeners, right? If you don't like where you are, then change something. Something that I say, something that I've wrote in my books, something that I keep preaching to people is, dude, your life is not going to change until you change your life. If you don't like where you're at, then don't be there anymore. Get up and go do something different.
Right. Right. And it's okay to change. Like, I feel like are more so resistant to change because of fear. And I often put myself, say the body is one of the things, especially when you're working out for me, is a catalyst to not be afraid of change. You know what I mean? Because like when you're putting your body through such stringent activity and pushing weights and trying to go harder and go harder, you're putting yourself in a territory where it's like you're pretty much fearless. I'm going to conquer this weight. I'm going to lift this. I'm going to do this. And you're achieving a goal that's painful, but your body is aching, saying stop, but you're just going to keep going. And so that's what I use to actually like, okay, if I could do that, then I could do this. If I could put my body through this and overcome the pain receptors telling me to stop, give up, and I just keep pushing, then what else can I do?
Well, what you're building there, what you're doing is you're building mental toughness.
Right.
You're pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and you're doing a hard thing. And at the end of the day, you look back on it and you go, man, I accomplished that hard thing. What else can I do? And I got a bunch of examples of stories that I could tell you about doing that. But that's really what it comes down to is every time you do something really hard, then you're pushing that comfort zone boundary out just a little bit further and a little bit further. And that's how you grow, man. When you go to the gym and you work out to failure, the idea, the goal when you go lift weights or when you go for a run or whatever it is to work your muscles to failure, what comes out of failure? Growth.
Right.
It's simple, right? And we use the gym analogy because it's just so easy to see that. It's so easy to see it, but you can take that into, you can take it into business. You can take it into writing a book. You can take it into going to pick your kids up from school. You want to, the idea, the goal is to keep bumping out that comfort zone boundary further and further.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I did. Cause I always was like, say on Facebook, I would write my thoughts and it'll be beautiful in paragraphs and people will love it. And I'll say, man, I need to write a book one day. But then last year, I was like, man, I'm about to really write a book. I need to do something. Come on, man. And then after I wrote my book and the way people are receiving it, it's kind of crazy. Like,
yeah.
The comments that I'm getting on Amazon, I'm like, I wonder who this person is. If they're just saying this just because they know me as a person.
Maybe, but maybe, right. You know what? Maybe. So when I get comments on whatever it is I put out there to people, the public is going to be, they're going to do what they do. And so I use these two things. I say, first of all, I consider the source, right? Mm-hmm. Who is this? Is this some internet troll who's got nothing else better to do and just lambasting whoever they are, or whatever they're putting out there? Obviously, that person is probably not going to get as much weight as, say, my wife. If my wife gives me feedback on something, I'm probably going to internalize that a little bit more and weigh that a little heavier.
Right.
The second thing I always ask is, are they right? Because they might be an internet troll and they might be a piece of shit living in their mom's basement eating pizza, but they also might be right. So you kind of have to have a little humility when you put yourself out there like you do on show or your guest. And for me, with the things that I do, when you put yourself out there, you're going to get feedback and not all of it's going to be 100% positive. Some people are going to comment that your hair was messy today or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Weigh that with those two scales and you might learn something. You might see, you know what? Maybe I did screw that up or maybe I could have wrote that paragraph a little bit better.
You are absolutely right because that actually prevented me from doing stuff like this is because, wow, what if somebody says something?
Oh, the fear of failure. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, say when you're a militant guy, it's kind of hard to lower your ego to those type of things. You know?
See, now you're getting into the good stuff.
Yeah.
Now you're getting into the good stuff. That old ego, man. You know what the antidote to ego is? The antidote to ego is humility. And this is something that I say all the time. If you were to listen to my show in almost every single episode, I say this, humility is a superpower because when you get to a point in your life, when you can say, I don't know, or I messed up and you can ask somebody for help, man, you open a door to a whole new world right there. And this is what I told the guy that I was coaching up just a few weeks ago when he called, we were on the phone and I gave him kudos. I said, dude, you just displayed a lot of humility by reaching out to me and you don't realize that you did it, but you asked for help. And now I'm going to open this door for you and you're going to see so many more possibilities. When your ego is telling you that you got all the right answers and you're doing all the right things, and then you get that feedback that says, dude, this wasn't good. This wasn't the right thing.
Right.
That humility is the piece that that allows you to accept that feedback. So humility is the antidote to the overblown ego.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that actually helped me a lot. Say I was before I put something out there, especially like a flyer or whatever, I'll send it to people to get their thoughts. One guy was like, you really like that? It's too much going on. And it was. And he was like,
That's good.
A look at the other people's flyers or YouTube. No, it was YouTube thumbnails. Take a look at their YouTube thumbnails and look at yours. And he was like, oh, man, never. Let's just do a Zoom and I'll work with you on Canva and we'll just figure it out.
That's awesome.
And now what he worked on with me is what I use for everything. And usually I was like, man, a couple of years ago, I'd have been like, man, F him. He don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's ego. But that sometimes that could cloud what the possibilities of you growing. And now I'm more so, you know what, man, when I get the feedback, I could just take it or leave it. Don't take it personal. Just, okay, well, maybe I can work on that. Or maybe I can do this, that, and the third. Because there were also, like, when I first started my podcast, it didn't look like this. Like, I had to basically get a camera. Now I have to get a light. Now I have to do this. Now I have to do that. Oh, well, I had to make adjustments as I go. And I was like, you know what? Sometimes you have to do that. Like, you just have to start. You know what I mean? Right. And then as you go, you're going to learn new things to enhance whatever you're doing.
Well, and you humble yourself down a little bit and you start asking questions.
Yeah.
You reach out to that network that you built. Or, I mean, I have friends. Hell, I might call you in a couple of weeks and be like, hey, man, how did you do XYZ? Or what did you use for this? Mm-hmm. And you can't be expected to have all the answers. But you're exactly right, man. You can't drive a parked car. You got to get in it and put it in gear and start going. You might not know where you're going and you might not know how to drive it, but start moving, man. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, seriously. And I say, when I go on other people's podcast, I'll be like, hey, what program are you using? What's this? Oh, I use this. Yeah. This, and the third.
That's how you learn, man.
Check that out. Oh, okay, cool. But, you know, I feel like a lot of us feel like we have to have this grandiose type of thing before we start because we're afraid of criticism. And I've seen that stop so many people in their tracks. Like, I used to have a guy that would tell me, man, you could record a whole movie on your cell phone. Come on, man. Just do something. Yeah. You could do all kind of stuff. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just work. Mm. Who knows what's going to come about it?
When we started our show, man, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. I called a bunch of people like you, people who's I'd been on their shows or I knew them and I knew they had a show. And I just started asking questions and I had a notebook and I started filling it up with, well, this guy uses this program and that guy uses that program and back and forth. And we finally, luckily, the guy that I do the show with, we were both fighter pilots and we tend to be very decisive people. So we collected a lot of information. We made a decision and we started moving forward. We still didn't know what the heck we were doing. I mean, the very first episode of my show, the first words that you hear out of my mouth, if you were to go to episode zero and click play, the first words you hear are, I'm a fucking idiot. Because in that moment, I had crisscrossed the wires and we didn't have any audio. We had no idea what we were doing. So yeah, man, you just start and you figure it out over time. You ask enough questions, you humbly accept feedback, and hopefully one day you get good at it.
Right. So, Paul, do you have a story that you could share with us? Like one of your toughest stories where it felt like giving up and things like that, but you want to just tell us how you actually kept on pushing? What were your thoughts when you kept pushing and how did you actually accomplish the goal?
Well, I have a lot. I have a lot. Every day in a fighter squadron, every day we go through a cycle of plan, brief, execute, debrief. So we're going through this process over and over again. Every day of my adult life, we've gone through this process. So you get pretty good at that stuff. Mm-hmm. Since I am going to give a talk this afternoon, I'll use this as an example and it'll be practice for me as well, but I'll give you the condensed version of it. So one of the books over here, No New Lessons, is about a hike that I took in Alaska. And the reason that we were in Alaska to begin with was our fighter squadron, we had been in Afghanistan for 6 months doing a close air support mission for the ground troops. And the problem is when you do a mission like that for that long, then the other mission sets that you're responsible for, they kind of atrophy just a little bit. So we were in a training cycle to get those other mission sets back up to a level. And that landed us in Alaska for an exercise that we were doing in June of 2009. Mm-hmm. Well, we decided one of the weekends, me and a couple of buddies, there's a lot of other factors that go into this, but we decided that we were going to go hike out to this bus made famous by the movie Into the Wild, the book Into the Wild by John Krakauer, and then the movie by Sean Penn, Into the Wild, in 2007. And so we set off on this trip to go hike out to this stupid bus, grossly ill-prepared, very bad decision-making along the way. But we are determined and there's a quote, and Robin Olds is a legendary fighter pilot. And he says, I'm going to look up here and I'm going to read it off of this poster that I have in my room. He says, fighter pilot's an attitude. It's cockiness. It's aggressiveness. It's self-confidence. It's competitiveness. But there's something else. There's a spark. There's a desire to be good, to do well in the eyes of your peers and in your own mind. So with that attitude that we had, we're not going to be turned away from making our goal out here.
Right.
Well, then we have to get our feet wet for the first time. It's 40 degrees in Alaska and we have to get our feet wet for the first time. And that's not pleasant. We could turn around, we could go back to the truck, or we could go around this water. or we could go through it. And going back to the truck's not an option because of what I just said. We're not quitters. So we bail off in this thing and our feet are frozen now. We pop out of the woods and then there's mud for as far as you can see. And this is mud like swallows cars type mud that we have to cross through. Same thing. Do we go around it? Do we go through it? Or do we go back to the truck? Well, we went through it. We get up to some beaver ponds. The beavers had dammed up this creek that we've been hiking in and we had to cross over that. So now we've got freezing cold water up past our waistband. And if you've ever gotten into a moderately cool pool, when you get water up that high, it's kind of a thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So now multiply that times a factor of freezing beaver pond water in Alaska. And it was not pleasant to say the least. So we get up to this river and this river that we have to cross is by far the biggest obstacle that we have to get across. Right. And it's an impressive sight. This river we have to cross is flowing south to north off of the Mount McKinley mountain range, just to the south of us by about 30 miles. Water's freezing cold and it's June in Alaska. So all the snow melt makes the river really like where the river is. It's outside of its banks. It's swelling outside of its banks. And so all these trees and bushes are just taking a beating. And we tried and tried to get across this river. And we almost lost one of us. There's three of us hiking. We almost lost one of us down the river. He fell in and he disappeared. He was gone. The water was kind of like chocolate milk colored. Like you couldn't see through it with all the dirt and silt and everything. He disappeared. Pops back up. We got him back out. And we ended up laughing about the situation a little bit later, but it was one of those moments where we kind of knew that the trip was over at this point. We weren't going to meet our destination. So we went back, we built us a fire, and we're starting to dry out a little, sitting in the sunshine, and my buddy pulls out three cigars and we're going to smoke our victory cigars, right? Mm-hmm. And we gave it everything that we had right up into almost losing this guy, and he almost ended up in Russia. All right, we feel good about this. We're gonna smoke our victory cigars, humbly admitting defeat to the river. All right. Mm-hmm. And that's when, like we were talking about earlier, that's when a random chance encounter with a complete stranger changed our life. There was a tent downstream a little bit where these three kids were hanging out. They had come from Canada and they were spending the summer up in Alaska. And they came out and they said, "Hey, did you guys make it to the bus?" "Well, no, the river's too high. It's too hard to get to." And, "Oh, well, we were just there yesterday." And they took us down and they showed us where they crossed and how they got across the river. And we crossed that darn river and we had 10 miles to get to the bus at that point. Hiked all the way out to the bus, hung out there with a German dude who had hiked in the day before, smoked our cigars, and then turned around and hiked it all back.
Wow.
So there's a lot of really good lessons in that. And I know that's like the 5-minute version of it. And this is a story that I'm going to tell over an hour here this afternoon when I go up to give this talk, this presentation. But there's a couple of good takeaways in there. One of them's decision-making. We're presented with a choice at a lot of different points along the way here. You have to weigh the information that you have to assess how important is this to me and make the best decision that you think you can at the time with the information you have. Mm-hmm. Another one is planning is important. Like it's important to plan out if you're setting audacious goals for yourself, whether it's saving for retirement or going on a trip with your family or getting swole at the gym, whatever it is, planning is important. Plan that stuff out and posture your resources appropriately. And then when it comes to the execution of that plan, give it everything you got, man. I mean, really put forth the effort to it right up to the point where you almost lose your buddy down to the Bering Sea, down this river. Give it the effort that it deserves. Humility is a superpower. Sometimes you're going to run up against an obstacle and you're just going to have to admit defeat occasionally. Mm-hmm. We, like I said, right, just short of death, we were determined and we were not taking no for an answer. Well, we, even with that attitude, we kind of had to back off and laugh at the situation and humbly retreat away from the river. And then the last thing is, opportunities are everywhere, man. There's opportunities all around you. And sometimes it's meeting a young man in the middle of Alaska, in the middle of nowhere, that shows you a path that you didn't know existed and changes your life. Sometimes it is at the end of working on something for years and a door opens for you and you have the opportunity to walk through that door. takes a little bit of fearlessness to try some of those things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't know what's behind that door. Sometimes you just have to trust yourself and make that good decision and go for it. But if you're hyper aware and you can learn to recognize some of these opportunities, then good things happen, man. You're not always going to get it right. I'm sure that you have failures in your life, and I have things that I look back that I wish that I would have done differently. But if you're constantly, this is an analogy that I used to use with my football players, and I say this all the time, is just move the ball, man. If you can just move the ball a little bit, then you're getting closer and you're trying new things. And it's like a bicycle, man. If that bicycle ever stops, it's going to fall over. So mm-hmm. keep that ball moving. Keep going. Keep reaching out. And sometimes it's a grind. Sometimes you just have to go left foot, right foot, and keep walking. But eventually you get out to that bus and you get to come home and write a cool book about it. And life is good, right?
Right. Right. That's absolutely right. Because I'm not going to go over my story, but I have a story not like that, but doing the Spartan race in the mountains and being prepared. But then on the way, people were giving me, people were giving me things to actually help me mm-hmm. with my journey as I went. And what that taught me was like, man, if you have the willpower, if you have the desire and you really have to accomplish something and you have no choice but to accomplish it, mm-hmm. things will come your way to help you out of nowhere. Like when you're locked in, say I had no choice. I was like on a ski slope, having to do 14 miles and calves burning, seeing people injured, all kind of stuff, right? Like the hardest Spartan race in the world. And people are like, do you want a sandwich? Oh, here, I have this for cramps. Here, do you want some this?
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
what? Huh? Like, why are you giving me your material? Don't you need them all? Hey, I was like, hey, okay, I'll take it. Here, take this.
That's
These
great,
are electrolytes
man.
For this. And it was just amazing, man. What could come your way when you just have that desire to just succeed and just keep pushing?
Well, sometimes you have to try to push yourself out of your comfort zone. I have a similar story. I've done a Spartan race as well. And I think that there's probably fewer opportunities to test your personal willpower than to do one of those. I mean, it really comes down to your individual level of effort on a lot of those obstacles. But one of the stories that I had was, I started seeing this Facebook ad for a half marathon race through the mountains here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And with my back problems and whatnots, I hadn't run more than about 4 or 5 miles in 5 years. And I ended up signing up for the race. I just wanted to see if my mind was strong enough to push my body through something like that. Mm-hmm. I got out there and I started running and things are going good, man. I get to the halfway point and it's all uphill on the halfway point. I set a goal of 2 hours and 30 minutes. I didn't know if that was a good goal or not, but at least it gave me something to chase, right? Mm-hmm. Get to the halfway point and I'm hydrating and I feel pretty good. Well, then on the back half, it's all downhill and I'm like flying down this mountain, right? And that's when my lack of preparation caught up with me and the mm-hmm. tops of my knees, those muscles right there in your calf or in your quads that connect down to your knees, my legs just turned to jello, man. And so I had to shift my goal a little bit. Yeah. I pivoted and I said, you know what? Okay. 2:30 is probably not realistic at this point, but I can finish without stopping. And I did. And I ran the race in 2 hours and 38 minutes, finished third in my age group. So,
wow.
Yeah. So what did it come down to? It came down to just mental toughness, man. Can I do this? Can my mind push my body through this stuff? Similar to what you ran into in your Spartan race. And that's where I go back to what we were talking about earlier, man. But dude, go out and do hard things. You'll find out a lot about yourself.
Yeah, I think mine took about 8-9 hours to complete that.
Yeah. Well, that Spartan race is no joke, man. There's some tough obstacles on that.
And there was this guy complaining the whole time. I can't believe I put myself through this. And I had to shut all of that out because there are people complaining while you're there.
Yeah, and they'll drag you down.
Oh, yeah. But like for me, I just shut everybody out. Like I don't even see anybody else. But there are also people that'll run past you. Keep going. You got this, bro.
Yeah.
Keep going. Come on, let's push. And I received that. Because that actually is like the universe, God,
it's a motivator,
telling you got this, like a random stranger, like what we talked about earlier, how somebody could just say something to you and it could really push you.
Yeah.
And
you know what, man, there's a powerful thing to take away from that too. And it's influence on others. And I go back to this Jim Rohn quote that says, you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. And as I started thinking about that and really dwelling on it, it was, I look at it from a different point of view and I go, rather than how those five people are influencing me, I want to look at how I'm influencing other people.
Bang.
And you never know who you're going to influence when. Like those people who were passing you and high-fiving you, they didn't necessarily know maybe that they were influencing you or getting you past. Maybe you were right at your failure point and that little bit of motivation got you going again. So when you walk out of the supermarket and your bag busts and you start throwing out a flurry of four-letter F words, you might have just influenced a little kid over here. You just have no idea. So your character matters and the way that you carry yourself every day matters. And don't lose sight of the fact that you have influence on the people around you.
Man, it's so funny. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday and I said that exact thing because I'm an introvert, so I'm pretty much to myself, right? And I was like, I don't have many friends. And I was like, hold on, I have to stop myself. I'm like, hold on. I come from the inner city in LA. I have friends that are gang members and this is that and the third. And I can be around them. You want to know why I can be around them? It's because when I'm around the gang members, they don't talk to me about gang activity. They ask me advice on business or on that. I am the influence. They are not the influence. And when I thought that, I'm like, when I put myself in a position to think, because I love Jim Rohn, like that's one of my favorites.
He's got some good ones out there.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite guys. But I had to step back and think, I need to be the influence to others. I'm here to serve them. They're not here to serve me. So it doesn't matter who I'm around. You're going to get the best that I got. And hopefully that'll influence your life.
Yeah,
I'm not the type, because I've never been the type to hang around somebody just because of what they have going on, or, oh, this guy drives this car. Okay, well, let me hang out with him because he's successful. I'm like, that's kind of like the thing now, but I'm more so, no, I need to create a footprint for me as a leader because I'm not like that. I'm not built like that at all.
That's good, man. And I would much rather be a leader than a follower. I don't buy into all the flashy stuff. I do me. And it ain't for everybody, and I'll be the first one to admit that. But those who it is for, man, I like the idea of being a part of their life. And I like that because I've been on a journey now for 3 or 4 years of self-improvement. I've got my wife on a journey of self-improvement. I came out of my man room one day and was walking into the kitchen, and she goes, "Hey, stop." And I was like, oh, when your wife says that, you're like, shit, what did I mess up? But she says, dude, I don't know what you're doing back there, but I got to get some of that. And it's because I'd been back here bettering myself. I'd been on the self-improvement journey and I'd been exercising more. I'd been reading more. I'd been getting better at public speaking and all these things. And that stuff just comes out, and you don't have to walk around beating your chest, telling people, oh, look at me. Like these people who put their workout pictures on Facebook every day. Who cares, man? Right. When you carry yourself around and you're confident and you walk with your chin up, people notice that stuff and they gravitate towards that. People crave leadership. And if you're one of those people, you're going to influence those guys. I can't tell you how many phone calls or text messages I've gotten that say, hey, man, can I do what you're doing? Mm-hmm. Or can you get me on a path? Can you help me with this? Yeah, dude, absolutely. And they were able to send me that text or that phone call because they saw the things that I was doing. I was leading by example.
Right. That's the most powerful thing ever. One of my friends was like, you can have a brand called Militant Grind if you're not in shape. Like, who's going to look at you? You know, it makes sense because it's like, you can't be Militant Grind all like stubby. Yeah. So it's because I'm big into fitness, but he was like, I mean, bro, you're fit. Okay, cool. But your superpower is like business and consulting and things like that and leadership. So it's, you selling fitness does a disservice, but it's, you have to be fit anyway. So that's just a part of you. You can't say you Militant Grind and you're not a strong looking man. And I was like, oh, okay. But then also I tell people, like, I don't really have to show too much. Say if I go, I'm fit. So if I go anywhere, right? And say if a man is sitting at a restaurant and he looks at me, he doesn't say a word or anything like that. He looks at that me and be like, wow, that guy looks like he's, man, I think I need to start going to the gym.
Yeah.
And then he starts going to the gym and change his life.
Yeah, you don't have to walk around beating your chest and showing people pictures of everything that you do. They notice. People notice that you're changing. People notice that maybe you're not hanging out with the same crowd or maybe you're just a little more articulate when you speak, or maybe your biceps have gotten a little bit bigger. They notice those things. And when they ask you, then you get to humbly tell them, yeah, man, it's because I've been grinding for a couple of years. If you want these things out of your life, then you're going to have to do that work, and you're going to have to go to the gym, and you're going to have to pick heavy shit up and put it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, man. That's a very true a testament of that. Yeah, Paul, this has been a great conversation, man.
Yeah, that was fun.
Really enjoyed it. So if you want, you could, you wrote two books.
Yes, I've written two books. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I see Work Hard, Don't Suck.
Yeah. That was so no new lessons was my first one. That's about the hiking adventure that I took in Alaska. And there's a lot of good lessons in there. Mm-hmm. As I was writing it, I realized that I didn't really learn anything new. It was all stuff that I kind of already knew, but I'd chosen not to bring out in the process of doing that. So it's more of a fun adventure type book with some lessons to take away. And then Work Hard, Don't Suck is, as my kids were getting older, getting ready to go out of the house, I wanted to give them one last volley of dad advice. And so I wrote down, I ended up with 160 things, and I chopped it down to 60, wrote one page, 1 8.5 by 11 single space page, about 800 or 900 words per topic. And that's where Work Hard, Don't Suck came from. And it's just, it's what I would tell my kids is the keys to life is if you work hard and give effort and try to suck less than you did yesterday, then I think you're going to be okay.
Right. Steady improvement.
That's right, man. I mean, to be a champion, what does it take to be a champion, man? You got to have desire. So you need to cultivate some passion or some want to. You got to find your why. You got to have some self-discipline. Mm-hmm. To choose the right things and say no to the wrong things. And then you have to have commitment. And if you have enough commitment over time and you mix all those three things together, then you mm-hmm. become a champion, man.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. So, Paul, where can people find you?
I got a website. It's paulroscoewhite.com. Also, if you wanted to hear some other like long form conversations of the things that we talked about, my podcast is b1change1.com. That's B and the number one, change and the number one. And I'm on all the socials as Paul Roscoe White.
Okay. Great. Great, man. So yeah, I'm sure you're going to crush it today.
I hope so. This was a good warm up. Yeah. Thanks.
No problem, man. So thank you so much for being on the Militant Grind podcast, man. And have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me, man. I might reach out to you and see if I can't pick your brain on some nuggets here.
Oh, for sure. Anytime.
All right, buddy.
All right.
We hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered. Remember, greatness is a choice. To stay updated on our latest content and continue sharpening your edge, hit that subscribe button. Let's keep grinding together. Remember to visit militantgrind.com.